Good morning again. Just a little inside baseball for you about preaching. Preaching a sermon just once is such a waste of a good sermon. And so in the times where I've been guest speaking, either in Oregon or Washington or California, I go back to the similar well of sermons that I know get a good response. It's comedians don't tell new jokes in every town. I don't preach new sermons at every congregation. And one of the really fortunate, lucky people who has benefited from that is Sarah Giles, who always seems to be sitting in the audience wherever I'm preaching and has heard probably six of my sermons 80 to 90 times. And so knowing that she was likely going to be here today, I made sure that the sermons that I'm preaching, she's never heard before. So this is her first new material since the mid-2000s. So Sarah, I hope you learned something from the last, like, three. I hope that these are good for you as well. Let's start today in Daniel chapter 1, in verse 1. It says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. So the situation that we have in front of us is Daniel, who is a tremendously good-looking youth, determining in his heart ahead of time that he is not going to defile himself with the king's food or the wine that he drank. And it's not just that Daniel decided to do something. If that's what he had done, it would have said, Daniel decided. But it uses a stronger word. In the ESV, it says resolve. Some translations say he determined in his heart. He determined in his heart that he was not going to do this thing. That is so much more than just a decision. I decided last Sunday to go to Chipotle for lunch. When I got to Chipotle, the line was so long, I didn't have the opportunity even to pay extra for guacamole. I went to a completely different place for lunch. I hadn't determined in my heart that I was going to eat Chipotle. I had just decided. Daniel determined in his heart not to defile himself with the king's food. So I wanted to talk to you about that a little bit this morning. We spent our class period talking about the value that God places on us and the work that God did over the course of all of time to prepare you to be adopted as his child. Once you are adopted as his child, what is it that you determine in your heart that you are going to do or not do? Several weeks ago, Misty and I traveled to Idaho for a wedding of a friend of mine. I was going to be performing the wedding, and he was literally the only person there that we knew. I didn't know his fiance. I didn't know any of her family. His family lives on the opposite side of the country. And so we knew that the rehearsal dinner was going to be a little awkward because we knew nobody else. Luckily, marriage is awesome, because you always have somebody there with you to hang out with. And so we weren't going to be too awkward because I'm pretty good at conversing with Misty. We got to the rehearsal dinner, and the way that the table was set up, I was sitting across from my friend. Misty was sitting directly across from his fiancée's roommate. And that was just how the conversation was going to go. There was nobody else around. And I was amazed at how fast Misty started making really good conversation with this complete stranger who she had nothing in common with whatsoever. By the end, they were talking about soccer that they enjoyed. They were talking about their jobs. And they were making a real deep, genuine connection. And I was really, really proud of Misty. Like, well, you're so good at making new friends. So as we were walking back to our hotel, I was commenting on her acumen at making new friends. And she said, when we got into that restaurant and I knew where I was going to be sitting and I could see the situation that I was going to be in, I determined in my heart that I was going to find something that I could connect with this woman about, and I was going to seek an opportunity to talk to her and influence her. I was blown away, because when I walked into that, I had determined nothing in my heart. I was just going to try and get through dinner without having too many awkward silences. But Misty walked in determined that she was going to have an influence on somebody for the kingdom. So are you more like me in your life, just kind of hoping that you're going to get through your day? Or are you hopefully more like my wife, and you are, as you go through your day, going through your day intentionally and deliberately determining in your heart what it is that you are going to do? What have you determined in your heart? Is there anything in your life that you are so convicted about that no matter what happens, no matter what is presented to you, no matter how nice the food is and no matter how nice the drink is that the king is eating, you have already determined in your heart that you are or are not going to do something? What is that line that you won't cross? What is the line in your life that you have determined in your heart not to cross? Because, honestly, if you haven't determined it in your heart, you're probably going to cross it, right? When we get ourselves into situations where we're making the decision on the fly as to what we're going to do with regard to a certain temptation or a certain sin, if we haven't made a commitment in our heart before we ever get there, chances are we're going to cross a lot of little lines that we never intended to cross when we woke up that morning. I know that's happened to me. And either I'm just incredibly weak, or it's probably happened to you too. Be like Daniel. Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food. At what point do you say, okay, this is enough? I'm not going to do this. And it happens in all sorts of ways. At what point are you going to say, I am not going to go another day without praying? I am not going to read my Bible less than 5 minutes a day. I'm in a relationship with my boyfriend or girlfriend. We are not going to be alone together in my car after 8 p.m. I know that's lame. I know 8 p.m. is lame. But it's safe too. What is the thing that you will do at any cost? Look over at Jeremiah chapter 20. It's funny how different books in the Bible hit you differently at different times in your life. I used to not relate to Jeremiah at all. In the last 2 years, Jeremiah has been the book that I have gone to again and again. Let's start in verse 7. Of Jeremiah chapter 20. O Lord, you have deceived me, and I was deceived. You are stronger than I, and you have prevailed. I have become a laughingstock all the day. Everyone mocks me. You see why Jeremiah means so much to me. For whenever I speak, I cry out, I shout violence and destruction. For the word of the Lord has become for me a reproach and derision all day long. If I say I will not mention him or speak any more in his name, there is in my heart, as it were, a burning fire shut up in my bones, and I am weary with holding it in, and I cannot. What is the thing that you are weary of holding in and you cannot hold it in and you are going to do no matter what it costs? What thing in your life are you so convicted about that no matter what it costs, you are going to do it? Jeremiah said, I don't care what my reputation looks like. I don't care how much people make fun of me. I don't care what kind of physical pain I'm going to suffer. I can't not talk about God. Maybe you've experienced that feeling with a movie that was so good, you can't imagine not telling everybody to go see it. In 2008, when Iron Man came out, there's not a soul that got within earshot of me that didn't know I thought that they should be seeing Iron Man right now. It was a pretty good movie. I determined in my heart that everyone was going to hear about that movie from me. Have I been that committed about my salvation? Have I been that committed about saying, there is not going to be a way that anybody is going to get away from sitting next to me on a plane without hearing about the Bible? Is it going to be awkward? Oh, yeah. Especially if we do it at the beginning of a 9-hour flight. It's going to get real awkward. Potentially. Or maybe it'll be amazing. Who am I to limit God in that situation and say, well, it might get awkward, and so I won't do it. Why didn't I do it? Because I hadn't determined in my heart before I ever got on that plane that that's what I was going to do. So who do you have to talk to? Who have you determined in your heart that you are absolutely going to talk to about Jesus? Let's go over to John chapter 1. John chapter 1 and verse 43. The next day Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, follow me. Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, we have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Nathanael said to him, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Philip said to him, come and see. Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said of him, behold, an Israelite indeed in whom there is no deceit. Nathanael said to him, how do you know me? Jesus answered him, before Philip called you when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. Nathanael answered him, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. Jesus answered him, because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You will see greater things than these. And he said to him, truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. When Jesus told Philip, follow me, and Philip realized who Jesus was, Philip had determined in his heart Nathanael was going to hear about it. Because as soon as it happens, Philip runs, finds Nathanael, and says, you've got to come see Jesus. We found him. We found the guy that Moses was talking about and the prophets. The entire thing that we have been hoping for, he's here. And even when Nathanael says, a classic Nathanael kind of thing to say, a sarcastic response, Philip doesn't stop. He says, no, just come and see. I mean, stop being a brat and come and see and prove me wrong. Who is that in your life? Who is the person who you absolutely know in your heart you need to talk to about Jesus? Have you determined in your heart that you're going to talk to them? Because I guarantee every single one of us has at least one person in our minds right now that we know needs to hear about Jesus. Maybe they've already heard about Jesus from you before, and that's why you kind of stopped talking about him to them. Because it would be awkward. Maybe it's a family member. And you only see them a few times a year, and you know when you get together at that family gathering, you're going to have an opportunity. If you haven't determined in your heart to do that, it's probably not going to happen. Oh, there just wasn't an opportunity. But there probably was an opportunity. There probably were several opportunities, but you hadn't determined in your heart you were going to do it, and so you didn't take advantage of it. How much will you give? 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 7 makes our giving very clear. Whoever sows sparingly, verse 6, will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. So what have you determined in your heart to give in a cheerful way? Now, this is referring at least somewhat to giving on the first day of the week. But if we've only determined to give some money on the first day of the week, that's, I mean, apologies, but that's like super rookie level giving. There is so much more that we are called on to give that has nothing to do with money as Christians. How much time have you determined to give to your brothers and sisters in Christ here? How much have you determined to open up your home in hospitality? How much have you determined to be benevolent to people that are in need? I have made the mistake many times over my life of thinking that the check that I folded in two and placed in the basket was my sufficient giving for the week. That's really just the beginning of my giving for the week. I need to be giving myself, pouring myself out for the people around me for Christ all week long. It's not going to happen, though, if I don't determine in my heart ahead of time that it will. Now, all of this comes back to your heart. And it's super important that if you're going to determine something in your heart as it relates to spiritual things, that Jesus has your heart. When we're talking about evangelism, and we talk about evangelism a lot, the way that we see the pattern in the Bible developing of evangelism is that somebody's given their heart to Christ. Their heart. From there naturally flows an obedience to God. When God really has your heart, when you value deeply the things that God has done for you, the response of a grateful heart to God is obedience to His Word. That's the best mouth I could find that was clip art. Apologize. But it's happy mouth. Once Jesus has your heart and the naturally flowing obedience out of your heart, talking about God and talking about what He has done for you makes so much more sense. Because of course you're going to talk about it. Jesus has your heart. When I first met Misty, I wouldn't shut up about Misty. People got tired of hearing about Misty. Would you just marry her so we can stop hearing about it? How wonderful she is and how smart and how brilliant and how pretty. Once Jesus has your heart and you're obedient to Him and you're talking about Him, that circle of influence of people all around you, they're going to hear about Jesus in a organic and real way, and Jesus is going to get them too. That's why we read 1 Peter 3:15. What's the very first part of that very evangelistic verse? In your heart, set apart Christ as Lord. Because once you've set apart Christ as Lord in your heart, being ready to give an answer for the hope that is within you comes so much more naturally. Too long in my own head, and maybe even in teaching that I heard, I got it backwards. I kept hearing, obey, 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 obey. You've got to obey. Look at the rules and obey them. And once you obey them, part of that obedience is getting out there and talking about Jesus. Obey Him and talk about Him. And then hopefully at some point in all of this obedience and evangelism, you're going to fall in love with this Jesus that you've been obedient to and evangelizing about, and then hopefully the world comes along with you. The problem is, I never got here because I never felt good about where I was over here. I have never been amazing at obeying. And again, I may be alone in that. You guys might be, well, that's the easiest part, Nathaniel. I'm pretty rotten at it, in fact. And so I never felt good enough about my obedience to want to talk about Jesus. And because I never felt good about my obedience, and because I felt guilty because I was never talking about it, Jesus never got my heart. Without my heart, I was worthless to Him. Here's a great story that none of you ever knew while I was attending here, going to Springfield High School in 1995. I was in a high school science class, marine biology, and we all sat at the science black tables where you sit and do the science. And before class, every day, we, the four people at each table, would talk and chat and just, you know, do what high school students do, and then class would start. Well, maybe 2 months into the semester, in this little kibitzing that happened before class, somebody brought up religion. And the girl that was sitting across from me, who I may have had just a tiny bit of a crush on, was talking about how she went to church. And I saw that as an opportunity to get into her good graces by using the fact that I went to church as well, and making that connection that would be real and lasting for a relationship with her. And as soon as I said, oh yeah, I go to church too, all three of the kids at my table turned to me with looks like they had just seen somebody walking on Mars and said, you go to church? You don't talk like somebody that goes to church at all. That was horrifying, because I had been here in that pew that Sunday. I was going to be there that Wednesday night, and I was going to be there again the next Sunday. But you know what I wasn't doing in between those three times? Anything that looked like my heart belonged to Christ. I was trying my best to obey, failing, not talking about Him because of that, and then when the opportunity arose, I was like the worst failure ever at doing it. Jesus has to have your heart. John chapter 4 is a well-known story. Jesus is in Samaria. In verse 7 of chapter 4, a woman from Samaria comes to the well where Jesus is to draw water. And Jesus said to her, give me drink. Obey. And she kind of chafes against that and says, A, why are you talking to me? I'm a woman. And B, I'm a Samaritan. And it's like the two worst things that can be for you, a Jewish man, to talk to me. So why is this interaction even happening? And over the course of time, Jesus tells her things about herself that he shouldn't know and convinces her unequivocally that he is who he says he is and that she can get from him salvation through living water. He gets her heart. And then what does she do? She obeys him, and she runs back to town, and she tells everybody about it. And then what does Jesus get after that? He gets everybody in town. He got her heart, then her obedience, then her mouth, and then her entire circle of influence. Now look at 1 Corinthians 13. Another very familiar passage to you. Verse 1. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned but have not love, I gain nothing. Everything that we talk about as it relates to Christ has to start with Jesus getting your heart. Evangelism makes no sense if the foundation of that evangelism isn't a burning love in your heart for Jesus Christ. A love in your heart for Jesus Christ that results in obedience. That results in you wanting to share that most precious of relationships that you have with the people around you. I annoyed people when I talked about Misty, but there was no doubt in anybody's mind that I loved Misty. You might annoy people around you talking about Jesus, but you're probably not going to annoy anybody around you talking about Jesus if you don't genuinely love Jesus. Those two things just don't go together. I didn't walk out of Iron Man thinking, that was a mediocre movie. Everybody should go see it. I walked out of Iron Man pumped. It's exciting. I came up out of the waters of baptism pumped. Because it was exciting. The first thought I had, the very first thought I had when I came up out of the waters of baptism as a 10-year-old child was, I got to tell my fifth grade teacher about Jesus. And when I look back on it, I think, what a naive fool to come up out of the waters of baptism and think that as a 10-year-old I'm going to have any impact on my fifth grade teacher. But then when I think that, I think, no, that is the wrong thought. My 10-year-old thought of I've got to tell my fifth grade teacher about Jesus was exactly the right thought. That's the passion I need to have today for Jesus. I need to determine in my heart right now, all of my coworkers, all of my seatmates on long-distance plane flights to Central America need to hear about Jesus. I've got to determine that in my heart today, or it's not going to happen. We don't read about Daniel's faith if Daniel makes the decision about whether or not to eat or drink the minute that the food is presented to him. Because he would have eaten and drank. He would have consumed it. So what is in your heart right now? What is it that you are going to not do? What is it that you are going to do? Who is it that you are going to talk to? Determine that in your heart right now. Don't wait until tomorrow. Don't say, you know what, this week, I think I might read the Bible. Because we've probably all spent Sundays thinking that exact thought, and then tomorrow comes and we're still not doing it. If I had started reading the Bible with the vigor that I have promised myself on a Sunday morning that I was going to start reading the Bible with, I would be an unequaled Bible scholar with how many times I would have read through the Bible. But the fact of the matter is, I never determined it in my heart. I just made a casual decision. I was interviewing for a job in Sacramento in 2008. And the person I was interviewing with liked me, offered me the job. I turned it down because I thought that I wanted to move to Kentucky. And then the end of 2008, a super great time in this country to try to get a job. Kentucky didn't work out, so I came back and I called him and I said, "Hey, is that job still available?" And he said, "I think that you need to read a little bit in the book of James about somebody who isn't very good at making decisions and committing to one thing," which kind of surprised me that a person at a secular job was asking me to read James before I took a job in coffee. But he was right. He was right. I was being tossed to and fro. I never determined in my heart what my commitment was going to be. Determine in your heart right now what yours is going to be. Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, thank you so much for today. Thank you for the opportunity that we have not only to come together and worship you together, but thank you for the opportunity that we have to be an encouragement to each other. Help us to cherish that. Help us to be grateful for those around us that chose to come today. Help us to appreciate sacrifices that they may have made to be here. God, help us to have a resolve in our hearts today to share your gospel, to do the things that we know that we need to do, to talk to the people that we know we need to talk to, and to stop doing the things we know we need to stop doing. Dwell in our hearts, Father. Dwell in our hearts and help us to make our hearts a pleasant residence for you. Help us to deny ourselves and to fill ourselves up with your Son. God, make us lights in this world so that when people see us, they don't see us, but they see the glory and the grace and the love of your Son shining through us. Father, we ask these things, as always, not because we think we deserve them, but because we can ask them in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen. If you have determined in your heart that you need to be saved, you do. That's right. That's a correct determination. But if you have not resolved to actually follow through on it, let's just do that. Let's just follow through on it now. There's no value in waiting. It doesn't go on sale later. It's going to be the same now. It's going to be the same tomorrow. But the thing is, we're not guaranteed tomorrow. So let's do it today. If you have resolved in your heart that you need to be saved now. Or if you have not resolved in your heart very well, and you know that you've got things that you need to confess and you have things that you need to make right with God, resolve in your heart to make them right today as well. Don't wait. Again, we might not have any more time. And the longer that you wait, the less opportunity the good people of this church have to support you and lift you up and encourage you and help you up out of whatever it is you're in. We're all in things. We've all struggled. We've all sinned. We are here because we are avowed sinners and we know we need Jesus. Nobody here has got it all together. Unless, again, I am badly mistaken and I'm the only one that is not all together. I'm not. And that's why I'm here. And if you're not, I can help you. and so can lots of other people.